Well, I'd like to begin with a poem that really sets the stage for the adoption. If you could read, it's the opening poem in the book. It's called The Strangers.
Sure thing. And it is the opening poem in this particular collection, and it seemed like an appropriate poem to write about because it was the first time that I met my son. I like to say that most people go to a hospital to meet their children for the first time. We went to the Omaha Regional Airport, which was a very surreal experience, as you can imagine, and the adoption agency had told us to stay the night in Omaha, not drive back to Sioux Falls because he would be overwhelmed and certainly have jet lag. So we got a hotel room and we filled it with toys, and my wife and I had no idea what this would be like. So this is called The Strangers, on the night my internationally adopted son arrived. After we picked you up at the Omaha airport, we clamped you into a new car seat and listened to you yowl beneath the streetlights of Nebraska. Our hotel suite was plump with toys, ready, we hoped, to soothe you into America. But for a solid hour, you watched the door, shrieking, "Umma," the Korean word for mother. Once or twice, you glanced back at us, and in this netherworld, where a door home had slammed shut forever, your terrified eyes paced between the past and the future. "Umma," you screamed, "Umma." But your foster mother, back in Seoul, never appeared. Your new mother and I lay on the bed, cooing your birth name, until, at last, you collapsed into our arms. In time, even terror must yield to sleep.
That must have been a situation that was, for you and your wife. Did you know what to do? I mean, here's this little boy, and he's crying for his foster mother, and you brought him into this world over to the U.S.
Yeah, it was, I felt really helpless because he was 51 weeks old, and he was plucked and taken away from everything that he knew, and I just wanted to help him, to soothe him, and he was really terrified. I mean, I think a lot of people assume adoption is a wonderful thing, and I believe that it is, but it at its heart, it's a breaking away. It's taking someone away from what they were born into. And in my son's case, he was just absolutely terrified because he didn't know who we were. We looked differently. We were speaking a different language. And I just felt really helpless on that first night.
Did you have all that in mind when you were in the process of adopting Sean? Is it Sean Minkyu?
Yeah, we kept his birth name was Minkyu, and in Korean that means warm-hearted and thoughtful. And aside from giving him life, that's the only other thing we know about his birth mother is that that's what she named him. And we didn't want to erase his Korean heritage, so it became his middle name, and we named him Sean, his first name. Sorry, I've lost the thread of your question.
I'll just ask. The whole nature of realizing that this is what was going to happen, that you were taking this child away from his culture of Korea bringing him here, and knowing that you would have to, it would be sort of uneasy, I imagine, for both of you, for him and for you getting used to having this little boy in your lives.
Yeah, so that's right. It was, and this is true of any child. When you bring a child into a home and it's your first child, it's like a bomb going off. It's like your whole life is totally rearranged. But with adoption, there's this extra sort of layer because of birth family and birth culture. And my wife and I really wrestled with, we wanted a child, but we couldn't have a biological child of our own. So we wrestled between, well, should we adopt someone from America or maybe from overseas? And there are some really rich conversations about the moral issues of doing that, right? Because it's not that we have saved our son from a bad life. We've taken him, from his birth culture, and I'm always aware of that. And I want to honor the fact that he comes from somewhere else. But we chose ultimately to adopt abroad because my wife is British, and we really liked the idea of adding yet another nationality to the house.
She's British, you're American, but you have a background in Ireland, so there's very much, and you met overseas.
We did, and I have an Irish passport, so it's kind of like the UN in my house, I guess. For breakfast this morning, I was aware that I was the only natural-born American in the house,
When did you start writing these poems? Was it from the beginning that he came into your life?
You know, this is the funny thing, Carl. I promised myself I would not be one of those writers that writes about fatherhood because now I'm a father, and that just seemed like too much of a cliche. So I really resisted writing these poems. And then after we'd had him for maybe only 2 weeks, I realized, well, that's just foolish. This is one of the most momentous things that's ever happened to me, and not to write about it, not to move towards what I wanted to do, which is to put pen and paper together and to add words to the page. It just seemed like I had to do this. So it took me about 4 years to write these poems. So the poems kind of grew up as he grew up.
Do you see these poems as something for him, particularly when he's older, to read and understand how he came here and how you came to adopt him and how you and your wife felt about having him in your lives?
Yeah, and I hope he reads it, and I hope that he recognizes that we've wrestled with a number of questions. But what I'm really looking forward to is he grows into the man that he will become. I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say about it, what he feels about being an adult adoptee. And, you know, maybe he'll go back to Korea and visit, and maybe one day he might be lucky enough to meet his birth family, which I would very much welcome and look forward to if that's what he chooses and she, his birth mother, chooses.
One of the poems in the book addresses these questions, and I'm wondering if you could read the number from page 48, Hide and Seek.
Sure thing. This is a great example of how, while I was just playing with my kid, this poem came to me, and I don't think it needs too much setup. Hide and Seek. Sometimes, when you're sleeping and the furnace purrs against winter, I wonder if we did the right thing taking you away from Korea. At the heart of every adoption is a ripping, a knife point, a breaking away, like cracking open an oyster. When you snore at midnight, I think of your other possible lives, with a family in Stockholm or London. You could have been raised near the sea or at the foot of a volcano, but instead, you got us. Did we do the right thing importing you to the other side of the world, bringing you to the prairie and the ice? As your bones push into the future and the netting of your heart widens, you will jigsaw these truths into a mirror. Your family past, so unknown, will make you feel snapped, broken, exiled. But until then, I have to tell you how much I love playing hide and seek, how you run into a bedroom, looking for me under a quilt, in a wardrobe, how you peek into a closet, searching here and there for your father. And when you find me, it is like a lock clicking open. Today, the truth is just child's play. All you have to do is count to 10 and open your eyes. Again, you shout, again. And so I hide. I wait in the dark like an easy answer.
It's Patrick Hicks reading Hide and Seek from his new collection of poetry. It's called Adoptable. And Patrick Hicks, by the way, is among the authors featured at the 2014 South Dakota Festival of Books, coming up in Sioux Falls later this week on Saturday morning at 9. He's presenting the program Reading and Writing the Holocaust. That's at the Multicultural Center in Sioux Falls. Then in the afternoon at 2, he's reading new and selected poems. And for more information about the schedule there, you can check sdbookfestival.com. And Patrick, even though this book is about your perspective raising a child from an adopted child from South Korea, you know, really, this book is about a lot of this. It's just simply about the joys of fatherhood.
Yes, yeah, it is.
It's for everybody. You know,
I hope so. I hope that even if you're not a part of the adoption community, and I'm surprised, you know, how deeply adoption affects so many of us. I think that people will see glimmers of what it means to be a father and a parent, just wrestling with trying to do the right thing and trying to do the best you can on a daily basis to nourish this life and to make them hopefully a greater person at the end of the day. But I wrote this book in concurrence at the same time that I wrote my Holocaust novel, so they represent darkness and light to me.
Yeah, the Commandant Lubitsch, the last time you were on the program, that's what we were talking about. And I'm wondering how if that helped, because when you're writing the Commandant of Lubitsch, you were writing about very disturbing, very heartbreaking sorts of stories, distressing. I mean, it was distressing to read, more so to write, I imagine. And I'm wondering if this really helped writing about your son, writing about the joys that life has.
It was absolutely essential for me. And I had the good sense very early on while I was writing this Holocaust novel, The Commandant of Lubitsch, which is which is very graphic. I don't believe there's any other way you can write about the Holocaust without being honest about what happened. But while I was writing The Commandant of Lubezeck, I realized very early on that I needed a counterbalance just to keep myself sort of on an even keel. So whenever the writing got too intense, and it often did, while I was writing the novel about the Holocaust, I would take a break for 5 days or a week, and then I would go and write poems about love and hope and the future and what it means to sacrifice for another human being. And when I felt like I'd had enough, I'd built up enough armor of light on me, I would go back into the darkness.
What about the balance of writing prose versus poetry? Did that help too, where you were working with a different style of writing?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And because I don't know how do I word this. I can slip easily between prose and poetry. To me, they're both very comfortable. Mm-hmm. They serve different purposes, but it's not that difficult for me to move from prose to poetry. And in fact, in my office at Augustana College, I have two different desks, and one desk is where I write poetry, and the other desk is where I write fiction. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe people that are ambidextrous feel this way. I don't know.
I was first introduced to your work as a poet, your poetry. I don't know if writers see themselves as either poets or are fiction writers or authors, or is it just you're just a writer and you do both things?
That's how, you know, I really love this question because I always saw myself more as a fiction writer. Mm-hmm. But it was my poetry that hit first. So I think people see me predominantly as a poet who then started to write fiction. But as far as I'm concerned, I was always a fiction writer who just happened to have success early with poetry. But I see them as very complementary, not competing in any way. They're very complementary because ultimately it's about putting words together and seeing how they spark off of each other and really trying to make a connection with the reader. So as long as I can do that, I'm pretty happy with whatever medium I'm working with.
You mentioned that after writing these poems, the book is out there, Adoptable, that you mentioned the adoptable or the adoption community, people who, like you, have adopted kids from overseas. What has been, you know, have you gotten much input from people that were in the same or are in the same situation as you?
This has been one of the, every time a book comes out, there are these unintended consequences, and I've been very blessed that they've been very positive for me, both with the novel and with this, and the readings that I've done for Adoptable have served to be this wonderful public forum where people can they can talk about being adopted themselves. So when we get to the question and answer part of my readings, it's really lovely for me because people actually will talk about their own adoption experience. And that's really, really wonderful. And the greatest part about writing Adoptable was that I was put in touch with and I became good friends with adult adoptees themselves, including a wonderful poet out in California called Lee Herrick, who's almost exactly my age. And he was adopted from Korea about the same year that I was, you know, born here in the United States. And Lee has really helped me understand what the perspective of an adult adoptee might be like.
That must be very beneficial. So you can kind of see where... What's the right thing to do with your son?
Yeah, well, and he's an amazing poet in his own right, Gardening Secrets of the Dead. So if anyone wanted to maybe find out what it's like to be an adult adoptee, I mean, his poems are just really rich and nourishing.
One of the poems in Adoptable, you tell the story that your wife, the day that your son Sean was born in South Korea, that she felt something.
Yeah, there's a poem called Flutter. We were watching a play at Augustana College. I can't remember what the play is now. But my wife kind of leaned into me during the play, and she kind of whispered, she's like, I think he was born today. And, you know, I was like, okay. I didn't know what to do with that information. I wasn't dismissive, but I was. So it was kind of a mark was put on the calendar. And sure enough, that was the day he was born, and I have no way to explain that or account for that. And so... Yeah, weird.
It is weird. It kind of makes you, you know, it seems like it's more than just coincidence that would be that same date. But
yeah, well, and I was like, well, how come I didn't feel anything? To me, it was like another Thursday, you know?
One of the things that, as I mentioned, the book is about and you've talked about is you also think about your son, imagine him in the future. Yeah. And maybe as we begin to close here, you could read the final poem in the book, which is you essentially imagining your son at the very end of his life.
Yeah. And I'll say very, very quickly, this poem came to me very fast. I'd only went through about three drafts, and the moment that I finished it, I knew that I had to have it as the last poem. So, when he is an old man. Long after my body has been turned into ash, and his own children have walked into middle age, they will eventually gather around his hospital bed. My son, an old man with papery skin, will be hooked up to an octopus of machines. Tubes will push fluid into his body. His rib cage will rise and fall. His heart will blip. He might be scared, but also content with the arc and burn of his life. I will stand at the foot of his bed, just as I did when he was a baby, watching him breathe. As nurses rush in for his final moments, I'd like to put my cool hand on his cheek and whisper into his ear that his daddy still loves him. If there is another life, I'll be waiting for him, just as I did at the Omaha airport when we first met. I'll be the one craning my neck at the new arrivals, waving my hands like crazy, ecstatic at last to welcome him home.
That's a beautiful poem. And one of the things that I got out of the book, among many things, was just the love that parents have for their children.
Yeah.
Just, you know, sometimes I think as children ourselves, we don't really see our parents. You don't really kind of understand what sort of the strength of love that they have for us. And I think that comes across in that poem and many of the other ones that are in
this
book.
Thank you. Yeah, something I was very cognizant about, writing about the Holocaust, a novel full of hatred. I really wanted to write about this idea of just loving someone to the point of they're far more important than your own life.
All right, well, Patrick Hicks, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us again.
Always a pleasure. I love being on the show. Thanks, Carl.